And here's the quote that stuck with me. Beck said, 90% of my skills are now worth $0, but the other 10% are worth 1,000 times more. That 10% is judgment, architecture, taste, the stuff you can't prompt your way into.
It's Rubber Duck Radio, episode 18. I'm Tim Williams, and with me, as always, is Paul Mason.
Hey, Tim, let's jump into it.
So Anthropic dropped Fable 5 this week, and I'm going to say something that might sound ungrateful, but I genuinely don't know who this model is for.
Yeah, I was wondering how long it'd take you to get there.
I mean, here's the thing. It's a Mythos class model. It's powerful. The benchmarks are real. But it's priced at $10 per million input tokens and $50 per million output. That's double Opus 4.8. Double.
Triple Sonnet 4.6, actually.
Right. So I'm sitting here looking at my workflow, asking, where do I slot this in? What task am I doing? Where I go, you know what? This is the moment Fable 5 earns its keep. And I keep coming up empty.
Same here, man. And I've actually been using it, like, extensively, burned through my max plan credits way faster than I expected.
Okay, so that's actually what I want to get into, because you've been hands-on with it. What's the real experience been?
So here's my honest take. It doesn't feel like a step change. I want to be fair. It's good. It's really good. But if you didn't tell me this was a Mythos class model, I don't think I'd know. It just feels like another Opus launch.
Really? Even with the whole Mythos lineage?
Yeah. And look, I don't have evidence behind this yet. I'm not doing a formal benchmark audit. But day to day, I'm not hitting a moment where I go, Opus could never have done that. It's more like, this is slightly cleaner, slightly faster, slightly more surgical with the diffs.
And for double the price, slightly doesn't cut it.
That's exactly my point. The per token cost makes it this weird thing where even if it's better, you're constantly doing mental math. Like, was that prompt worth 50 cents? Was that response?
And this is what bugs me. Not that the model exists. I'm glad they're pushing the frontier, but the pricing tells me this is a production model. They want you building on it. And yet I can't figure out the use case where the economics make sense.
You know what I keep wondering? What capability does this actually unlock for a developer who already knows what they want?
Say more about that.
So if I'm building something, if I have a clear vision, a clear architecture in my head, Opus 4.8 already gets me there. Like, it writes good code. It understands my intent. Fable 5 might do it in fewer turns, sure, but I'm not blocked on Opus. I'm not sitting there thinking, if only my model were smarter.
That's a huge point, because the narrative on Twitter right now is, this is the one, Mythos for the masses, the model that changes everything. And you're saying, in practice, it's just another Opus.
I mean, I wouldn't go that far. It's better in specific ways. The diffs really are more targeted. It hallucinates less on long context. There were a couple moments where it caught things Opus missed. But yeah, the gap between the Twitter hype and the daily experience is real.
And this is where I get frustrated with the whole pricing model. Because if the value prop is fewer turns, fewer tokens, great, but you're charging double per token, so you're eating your own efficiency gains, the math doesn't work unless the task genuinely requires Fable-level reasoning.
Yeah, and I haven't found that task yet. I've thrown some gnarly stuff at it, multi-file refactors, cross-cutting concerns, stuff where Opus gets confused, and Fable handles it. But so does Opus, 9 times out of 10, just a little slower.
So let's talk about the guardrails for a second. because that's the other thing lighting up Reddit and Hacker News.
Yeah. So the thing is, Fable 5 apparently has these safety measures inherited from Mythos, and in practice, it's refusing things that are completely mundane.
I saw someone on Reddit saying it blocked a request to refactor existing code. Just refactor existing code.
Yeah, and someone else got flagged for asking about Hermitian matrices. Hermitian matrices, a concept in linear algebra. The model switched them to Opus 4.8 for security reasons.
I'm sorry, a math concept got flagged for security? That's not a guardrail, that's a bug with a press release.
Right? And look, I get why Anthropic's being careful. Mythos genuinely spooked people. The government was involved. But if you're going to release something to the public and charge double, it has to work for the public.
So here's the question I keep coming back to. Is Fable 5 a product, or is it a demo of what Mythos can do with training wheels bolted on?
That's actually a really good way to frame it. Because if it's a demo, the pricing makes sense. You're not supposed to build on it. You're supposed to try it, be amazed, and wait for the real thing.
But the API is open. They're charging production prices. They're telling enterprises to build on it. So which is it?
I don't think they know yet. I think Anthropic is in this weird position where they have this genuinely powerful technology, but the safety constraints and the compute costs are eating them alive. So they price it high, gate it behind guardrails, and hope the market tells them what to do next.
You know, Paul, there's actually something bigger here that I've been thinking about, and it's not just about Fable 5's pricing.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
No, hear me out. The hardest problems in agentic AI right now, they have an almost identical shape to the hardest problems we had in software engineering before AI showed up.
Yeah. Focus, context management, complexity management.
Exactly. AI didn't invent these problems. It just shined a flashlight on them, made them impossible to ignore.
And here's the irony. We're responding to this by adding another layer, the AI layer, the agent layer, on top of everything else.
Yeah. We looked at a complexity problem, and our solution was add another meta layer, which is itself a new form of complexity.
Totally. And look, there's a real benefit to being able to work at that higher level, no question. But we've seen this movie before. Every generation of software engineering adds a new layer of abstraction and says, this time, the lower layers are dead.
Right. And they're never dead. C didn't kill assembly. Java didn't kill C. Python didn't kill Java. What actually happened is new people entered the industry who work at higher layers, relying on people who still work at the lower ones.
You know what this reminds me of? There's this project called David, that's D-A-V-1-D, like David, but with a one in the middle. It's a play on AV1. The Videoland team, same folks behind VLC and a lot of FFmpeg, built this AV1 decoder almost entirely in handwritten assembly.
Wait, handwritten assembly for a modern video codec?
And they built David hand-tuned AVX2, AVX512, Neon on ARM, and it was 2 to 4 times faster than LibOhm. Netflix actually funded part of the Neon work for 10-bit decoding on mobile. And it ended up everywhere. VLC, Firefox, Chrome, Android, Windows, FFmpeg itself, the reference implementation lost, assembly won.
So the team that built the reference decoder in C, the official one, from the standards body, got absolutely beaten by a handful of people writing assembly by hand. That's not a minor optimization. That's proof the lower layers aren't dead. They're where the real performance lives.
And here's where AI fits into this awkwardly. AI is bad at writing low-level code, like genuinely bad.
Yeah. And the reason's probably straightforward. There's just not enough assembly in the training data, not enough low-level, hand-optimized, craft-level code for these models to learn from.
Right. So the thing we're adding on top, this AI meta layer, it can only help you at the layers where it has training data.
Which is overwhelmingly high-level, popular language, abundant code territory. It doesn't touch the bottom of the stack.
So here's the uncomfortable conclusion. AI has made us more productive at high-level work, but it's also revealed in stark, undeniable terms that the stack still depends on people who can go low, and AI can't follow them there.
Yeah. And if you're a developer who's only ever worked at the top of the stack, you might not even see the lower layers until they break. And by then, AI won't save you.
So all of that, the low-level code, the assembly that still beats everything, the layers that never actually die, it makes me think about something adjacent. We've been talking about how tools have changed, but the process, how we organize work, how we plan, how we track, is basically frozen in time.
Oh, you mean the 2-week sprint that was designed when the hardest part of software was coordinating humans typing code?
Yes, exactly that. So there's this guy, Steve Jones, executive VP at Capgemini. He published a piece that lit a fire under the industry titled AI Killed the Agile Manifesto.
Yeah, I read that. His core argument is pretty hard to argue with. He's building working applications in hours, migrating entire apps on single flights. And Agile's third principle is literally deliver working software frequently from a couple of weeks to a couple of months. That timescale is absurd now.
But here's where it gets interesting. The reaction wasn't unanimous. Sonia Sidorova, she's the CEO of a company called Nave, she said something I think is more useful than Jones's headline. She said, Agile isn't dead. It's optimizing a constraint that moved.
That's a really clean way to put it. The constraint was, how do humans collaborate to build things? Stand-ups, retros, story points, all built around that. But when agents can build in minutes, the constraint moves to how do humans decide what to build and validate it actually works.
Right. And if the constraint moved, then the unit of work is wrong. Stories as we write them, sprints as we plan them, they become liabilities. A story that was sized for a human working for 3 days gets obliterated by an agent in 20 minutes. And then what do you do?
You sit there and stand up saying, yesterday I reviewed a lot of AI-generated code, today I'll review a lot more. Which, by the way, Jones makes another point that I think is genuinely important. He says documentation matters more in an agentic workflow, not less.
Yes, this is the part I keep coming back to. The Agile Manifesto says working software over comprehensive documentation. That made sense when creating working software was expensive, when it was the hard part. But Jones's point is AI makes working software trivially easy to produce. It can generate code that looks like it works. The hard part is knowing whether it actually works, whether it's maintainable, whether it's correct at the edges, whether it has technical debt. Documentation becomes the thing you hold the code against.
Yeah, and Jones goes even further on the manifesto itself. The first value, individuals and interactions over processes and tools. He says that's exactly backwards for agentic workflows. The tools absolutely matter now. Whether you're on Riplet versus Claude Code versus Copilot, that choice determines everything about how your project works.
That's uncomfortable. But he's right. I mean, if you're building an enterprise app with Claude Code and a team of agents, you cannot be tool agnostic. The process is the tool now.
So here's where the industry is trying to catch up. Microsoft published something called Agentic Agile. Daniel Epstein over there. The idea is stop starting with prompts. Start with specs Every capability is an issue. Every issue has acceptance criteria. The agent doesn't get a vague prompt. It gets a contract.
Yeah, and I think that's the right direction. Derek Ashmore over at CIO made a related point. In agentic engineering, everyone on the team becomes a specifier. The role shifts from I write the code to I define what the code should do. Stories get bigger. Concurrency management becomes about making sure agents don't step on each other.
And testing, end-to-end testing becomes way more critical. Because agents are faster, but they have a higher likelihood of introducing problems that only show up at the system level. They don't have the same contextual understanding a human developer builds up over months on a code base.
So this brings me to Kent Beck, one of the original Agile Manifesto signatories. And he's been writing about what he calls augmented coding versus vibe coding. Vibe coding is you feed errors back to the AI, hope for fixes, don't really care about code quality. Augmented coding is you keep engineering rigor, clean code, comprehensive testing, careful design. The AI handles the typing, you handle the judgment.
And here's the quote that stuck with me. Beck said, 90% of my skills are now worth $0, but the other 10% are worth 1,000 times more. That 10% is judgment, architecture, taste, the stuff you can't prompt your way into.
That's the thing. The same way we discovered that higher level abstractions didn't kill assembly, they just added more people at the top while the bottom was still there. AI is not going to kill process. It's going to reveal which parts of process were real and which parts were just coordinating slow human typing.
Yeah, and the parts that were real, spec writing, acceptance criteria, governance, architecture, those get more important, not less. Epstein's team learned this the hard way. They deferred CI/CD to later stories. By the time they added it, they'd already built on assumptions that had never been validated, had to reopen and redevelop features.
That's the pattern, isn't it? Governance from day one, not bolted on after the mess is made. And here's a stat that haunts me. Forrester State of Agile report, 95% of professionals say Agile is critical to their operations, but only 7% achieve full proficiency.
So we had a 7% success rate before agents, and now we're adding AI into the mix, moving faster, generating more code with less human review time. That gap between we think this matters and we're actually good at it, it's about to get a lot wider.
So the question isn't, is Agile dead? The question is, are we willing to rebuild our process for a world where the building happens in minutes and the deciding is the only thing that can't be automated? Because right now, the process is the bottleneck and nobody's sprint planning their way out of that.
Speaking of process that's broken, did you see Steinberger's tweet this week?
Oh, I saw it. Here's your monthly reminder that you shouldn't be prompting coding agents anymore. You should be designing loops that prompt your agents. 6.5 million views.
Yeah, that one. And look, I want to be fair here. Steinberger is not a nobody. OpenClaw hit 180,000 GitHub stars in 3 months. He's now at OpenAI. He runs 100 Codex instances maintaining open source repos. The guy has earned an opinion.
He has. And I want to take his argument seriously because there's something in it. The idea that we should stop being the thing inside the loop, hand typing prompts, and instead design the system that prompts the agent, that's directionally correct. Boris Cherny at Anthropic is saying the same thing. Carpathy's saying it.
Right. But here's where I think the tweet goes off the rails. The agent is already a loop. React, reason, act, observe, repeat. That pattern has been the standard since 2022. Every modern agent framework is built on it. Claude Code, Codex, LangGraph. It's all loops.
And this is the irony that I cannot get past. Steinberger's own project, OpenClaw, has proven that AI agents will happily churn tokens even when they're not making improvements. He posted the receipts himself. $1.3 million in API tokens in a single month, 603 billion tokens across 7.6 million requests.
$20,000 a day on the peak.
And he called Ralph Loops the simplest possible while loop around a Claude call, the ultimate token burn machine, which is exactly the problem.
Exactly. So here's the question. If you don't have very well-defined, measurable goals for your agents, what is the loop doing? It's not converging. It's not iterating toward anything. It's just spinning, burning tokens, the agent agreeing with itself on repeat.
And the best reply in the whole thread came from a guy named Moz Yassin. He said, designing the loop is half of it. The other half is putting something in the loop that can say no, a test, a type check, a real error. A loop with nothing to push back is the agent agreeing with itself on repeat.
So let's actually be constructive here, because there is a real pattern that works. If you have well-defined measurable goals, the proper use case is agent orchestration. An orchestrating agent spins up sub-agents to complete individual tasks. Each sub-agent has a specific bounded job. The orchestrator tracks progress against the goal.
Yeah.
And as long as the orchestrator is running inside a harness that does auto-compaction, compressing the context window so it doesn't blow up over time, it can keep going until the goal is actually complete. All the major harnesses have this now. Claude Code does it. Codex does it. It's table stakes.
And there's also a use case for scheduling agents to spin up and work on something at future intervals. Cron plus a decision maker in the body. That's real. That ships. But that is not a loop. That's a scheduled job with an LLM call in the middle. Different thing entirely.
Cron jobs have funny rebranding right now. That was actually the best skeptic line in the whole discourse. Somebody said, Cron jobs have funny rebranding, RN. Half right. But the real pushback is simpler. Steinberger's advice feels completely out of touch with the reality of software development. Most teams don't have unlimited OpenAI tokens on their employer's tab.
Most teams aren't maintaining 30 open source repos with 100 agents. Most teams are trying to ship features and not burn seven figures in API costs.
And I think that's where I land. Maybe Steinberger is talking about a use case that makes perfect sense for what he's building, autonomous open source maintenance at scale, with budget literally not a constraint. That's a real problem, that's a real solution. But as general advice for software developers, for vibe coders, for teams trying to ship products, telling them to stop prompting and design loops without first telling them, your loop needs a goal, your loop needs a test that says no, your loop needs a budget cap, and your agent is already looping, that's not advice. That's a subtweet from an alternate universe where tokens are free.
The Reddit crowd had the sharpest version of this. Monthly reminder that you need to orchestrate multiple agents in loops so they can blow your money generating bugs without you behind the wheel. It's mean, but it's not wrong.
It's mean, but it's not wrong. That might be the subtitle for this entire episode. Here's the moral of this one. Loops are not the product. The product is what you put inside the loop, the goals, the tests, the constraints, the budget. And if you skip that part, you're not doing loop engineering. You're doing token cremation. So here's the thread running through this whole episode. Fable 5, double the price for a model that doesn't feel like a step change. The assembly codec that beat every higher level competitor. Agile processes frozen in 2001 while AI writes code in seconds. And a guy with 100 agents telling the rest of us to stop prompting and design loops. What connects all of this? AI isn't solving the hard problems, it's revealing them.
Yeah, every segment was about a constraint that either moved or got ignored. Fable 5, Anthropic ignored the budget constraint for most teams. The David story, the constraint was raw performance and hand-tuned assembly still wins. Agile, the constraint moved from coordination speed to decision quality, and most teams haven't noticed. And Steinberger, he ignored the goal constraint entirely. Loops without measurable goals aren't engineering, they're gambling.
That's exactly it. The teams that win in this next phase aren't the ones with the most agents or the fanciest loops. They're the ones asking, what's the constraint right now? Is it budget? Is it latency? Is it decision quality? Is it craft? AI accelerates everything, including your failure to define what you actually want. The flashlight is on. What you see depends on where you point it. That's our show for this week. Thanks to Paul Mason for riding shotgun through pricing math, assembly language victory laps, agile existential crises, and token cremation. Find us and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you've got thoughts on Fable 5, or if you're one of the 7% actually doing agile well with agents, we want to hear from you. I'm Tim Williams. Here's looking at you.